setting up shop.
Well, hello again and welcome back to Setting Up Shop, the podcast where myself and two other makers talk through our journeys towards potential professionalism from our craft, and hope you come along for the ride and maybe learn a thing or two, or maybe reach out and inspire others as well. So my name's Dan, I'm a woodworker from the UK, and with me, as always, are Rasmus Lowen, a blacksmith from Norway, and Heidi Jacobs from Whitehall Pottery in the USA. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hello. So this is our final episode of this season, which is both sad times and also a time for reflection. So we are going to cover in this episode, we're going to talk a bit about accountability and also reflect on, you know, and be accountable with one another about things that have happened this year in our business and that kind of stuff, and reflect on that. Because part of the reason for this podcast was to hold each other between the three of us accountable for continuing onwards and moving towards our individual goals. That's what we're going to cover today. Hopefully you've enjoyed the season, and hopefully you're going to continue enjoying things. We are going to come back. We are making a new season, and we're going to endeavour to be a lot more prolific next year. That's one of our goals as the podcast. But in order for you to know when we're coming back, it would be a really good idea for you to like our Instagram page and tell as many friends as possible about it, because that is a time when I might actually remember to post on it, is when the new season comes out. So that would be a good thing. And for those of you, which has been a resoundingly small group of people who have come to us and said, how can we support the podcast further? You've got a couple of different options. First and foremost is make sure that you tell all of your friends, makery people about it, and say, hey, look, I think you should give this a listen. Hopefully it helps. Maybe you just have a bit of fun, enjoy listening to it. The second thing you can do, which is also free, is leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you can. If you're able to, a review and a comment, hopefully a positive one. Not had any negative comments come back to us individually, so we can do that. And finally, if you should choose to do so, we do have a Patreon account. And you are able to go on there and throw some pennies at us if you should choose to do so. But we do not see any obligation from that. However, anything sent will be a contribution to help the podcast run and the costs of it running each year. That being done, all of the admin out the way now, let's have some fun. Let's have a continuing conversation. Rasmus, you brought this conversation up, so you go first.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to do a bit of checking in on what were the goals we had for this year, how many of those did we achieve, and possibly why not did we not achieve them? And then maybe also looking a bit forward into what do we hope to do to actually achieve next year.
I already feel triggered. This is going to go very well.
Excellent.
Okay. So we're going to consider each other's goals and whether or not we did or didn't achieve them. Obviously, this is going to be a summarized, condensed version. I'm happy to go first because realistically, I'm one of those terrible people who is really good at writing a list. And because I've written the list, that means I promptly forget everything on it because I don't have to remember it anymore because it's written down, which is a really bad habit. And I constantly try and think of ways to get around that. As my wife will tell anyone, I have got numerous notebooks and diaries and various things in different colours, and they all get lost around the house, and I start with good intentions and never really get to the end of that.
I can relate.
Yes, I was going to say, for those of you out there going like, oh, I don't know, it's a bit awkward, please realise you are not alone. However, I have achieved some goals this year that I set. So my list was a lot shorter because I wasn't doing any Christmas markets this year because we went away. I used all my annual leave on going on holiday instead. So my goal for this year was two of them. One was to get a qualification in teaching, and one was to apply and hopefully be accepted to the Register of Professional Turners. And I achieved both of those things this year. And whilst I didn't do as much turning practice as I would initially would have liked to have done, I have been given some different projects and I've had some challenges thrown at me through commissions that I could have said no to, but I chose to say yes in order to push myself forwards. So that's my kind of successes and wins. Should we start with successes and wins?
Yeah, let's do that.
Now, whether or not you guys want to talk about the thing I've just done or not is entirely up to you. If not, we can assess some of your others.
Okay, I think it makes a bit more sense to start to do person by person instead of jumping too much around.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, we've started now. We're carrying on.
Okay, good.
So what do you want to know?
You did decide not to do any markets this year.
Yes.
And did you feel... And remind us, the reason for that was to develop your own skill, right?
Yeah, it was. I didn't have the physical time slot, so I thought, right, let's take the opportunity to develop my skill set, potentially get some qualifications. And I also found myself quite often pondering on the business as a whole, which has led me to work heavily towards a rebrand, which may even be coming in January if I can get the graphics back from my graphic designer so that I can update the website and Instagram and everything. So it's been a reflection year and a skills improvement year.
Then I guess my biggest question would be, do you feel it's still been a worthwhile year?
Absolutely. And you and I actually, Rasmus, had a conversation off air after a different chat another time, because the one thing I did consider recently was whether or not I needed to go back to markets at any point.
Mm.
Because I've found recently I've started getting a lot more commissions. And when I say a lot more, I'm having just enough one at a time after the other to occupy my time. And we did have that conversation as to whether or not, almost in where I am in my path, have the markets served their purpose. And I think that's going to be a topic for next season. So I'm going to leave that as a teaser there, and we will have that as a deeper conversation if Rasmus can note that in Notion so that we remember to talk about it.
Already on it.
See, I told you it would be short and easy for me.
Yeah.
Honest, we'll ignore anything else on that might have been on a list that I don't remember.
Did you make any additional investments in your business this year? Right now it sounds like it's kind of like a net zero change for you. Like there wasn't any financial decisions other than possibly rebranding.
I did buy a drum sander.
Ooh, okay.
So for those who don't know what one of those is, or it's basically, it's a machine that you can, it's got a rotary drum on it, which has sandpaper. So it's a cylinder that spins at speed with sandpaper abrasive on it. And that's held horizontally on a motor. And then underneath that is a winding carriage, a conveyor belt. That's the word I'm looking for, two words. A conveyor belt that goes underneath so that, and you can adjust the height of the spinning abrasive wheel cylinder. And it means that you can put pieces of wood in there and sand them at a certain thickness so you can make sure they're actually perfectly flat all the way across. For those of you who are a bit familiar with woodworking, it's not the same as a thicknesser or jointer, but it's very similar. You would take fractions of a millimeter off at a time, but it means that things like cutting boards, you can get absolutely perfectly flat. So I bought this for one of the products I make for repeat customers, which meant that I can make sure the boards that I put on my lathe are completely flat on both sides before I've put them on the lathe. So rather than running the risk of trying to do that by hand with turning tools and then slipping and then ruining the piece, I know it's already the right thickness and I can just do the other fiddly bits. So that was an investment of round about £1,700. So it's not a cheap piece of equipment and they come in various different sizes. Mine's more hobby end of the spectrum rather than the professional end. But that was for process improvement and just adds another sort of string to the bow. It would be it's not really a direct comparison, Heidi, but I kind of feel like it's the same as if, you know, I bought an extruder for doing pottery type thing. It's like one of those ones you can do it manually, but it's never going to be as good as if you just sort of...
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you've got the even planes and everything. That's
And if you're batch working, it's just feeding a machine. You know they're all the same and then you carry on and that's it. So, yeah.
Well, I do want to hear more about this personal development with the certification that you did. I think it would be really great for our listeners if you could go into that a little bit more in depth. I know we kind of talked about it surface level, but if you could kind of talk about your reasons for investing in that portion of yourself, but also like what are the benefits that could or maybe have already come out of it?
So the first qualification that I got that was in theory simpler was a recognition that I was competent at being able to teach people how to learn how to turn on the lathe, and so it's a certification. It's not a nationally recognized accredited thing. It is the Association of Wood Turners of Great Britain have an award, and most importantly, you get a badge from it at the end that you can sell onto your turning attire. That they do a physical assessment. You have to do an online assessment to prove that you understand from the health and safety perspective. And then they do a physical assessment where I had to teach a student who hadn't turned before and take them through a project within a set period of time. So that, bizarrely enough, was actually, even though theoretically simpler, was I found more stressful than the other thing that I did. But at the end of it, I was deemed competent and was issued the badge and the certificate. So what that means is that although I've been teaching already in the day job for a number of years, if I were to ever offer teaching out on my own, I can make sure it's on the website that I have been assessed. I have been formally assessed by a recognised body to a standard. And that I am competent at teaching this thing, which hopefully will set me slightly above some other people, potentially. Not thinking of anyone in particular locally, but there are a number of people who retire and take up a hobby, and then people ask them if they're willing to teach, and they think, oh, I can potentially charge for it, which is all fine. But this would mean that I can display the fact that I have been assessed to a certain standard, and therefore it, you know, might persuade people to be willing to either spend a little bit more and learn with me or otherwise. So that's that one. And the second one I was a bit more torn about even applying for. The Register of Professional Turners is basically a list where people who are business owners or individuals can go to and try and find people who, again, should adhere to a standard. It is an organisation that is only run by volunteers. It actually is a subsidiary and was set up by the Worshipful Company of Turners of London. So all of the old kind of trade companies that you would imagine seeing in like Tudor England, a lot of them still have existence. There are worshipful companies of greengrocers and of fishmongers and of all kinds of weird and wonderful things, pewterers and stuff like that, which is lovely. And they realized that the Worshipful Company of Turners realized that there was a demand for people continuously contacting them saying, oh, I want someone to do X project. Where would I find this person? And so the Register of Professional Turners was set up. That also requires an assessment. So someone who is already a registered professional turner has to attend your personal workshop where you intend to do most of your work, make sure that it is, again, set up health and safety standards, assess the competency of your work, see some finished products, and have a conversation with you about what is it you intend doing and everything else. And again, that badge is partly a good thing to display on website, but it is also the fact that I will be, when they update their website, I will be listed on there physically, so that Google search-wise and SEO, I will also appear on that. So it's a good backlink to have to my website. and all of that kind of good stuff. So it's partly setting yourself apart, trying to be a little bit more a bit more special, because that's really good English. We could take it one step further and say a bit more specialer than the than potentially other wood turners around, but also meaning that people will tend to sort of view and understand the quality of your work should be of a certain standard. So that's kind of why I applied for both of those, and I was very pleased to receive both of those, which was good.
Yay, Dan.
I think feel like there's been enough talk about me already this evening, and I talk far too much. And we're 16 minutes in as well. Okay, then. Heidi, do you want to go next?
Sure. So I really have been thinking about this the last couple of weeks. Like, this year has been, unfortunately, from the metrics, has been the slowest year I've had in my business. And that's mainly because I've taken a pretty large step back. If we go back to the beginning of the year, huge milestone, the studio got completed.
Yep.
Which opened me up for being able to take on larger orders, which was super great. But then I got a little greedy with my space and I didn't want to start teaching yet. Yeah. So I kind of stepped back from that idea a bit and put that on pause, which was like one of my goals for this year, was to look into starting doing some one-on-one teaching. And I didn't have anybody in my studio even to visit until like September was the first time anybody outside of Ben and Carver were in my studio, which was fun because it was my friend and her daughter, and they threw for a little bit. And then my neighbor came over and threw for a little bit. So kind of testing out the boundaries there. But it was one thing on my list that I kind of backpedaled on, which I know we talked about this before, about like the purpose of setting goals. And, you know, it's okay to redefine your goals midway through the year, just depending on what's happening. But I'm feeling really disappointed in myself by the end of the year, because I did not throw as many pieces. I did not make as much money. I did not do any profitable shows at all. And it's really difficult for me to look at the positives, which there are a few. Like, I brought on a couple of new clients. I took on a new day job. But in the grand scheme of things, I am very much a metrics person, so I like to see the numbers. I like to see where I'm at. And when I pulled my spreadsheets for the numbers for the year, I didn't make 2,000 pots this year, which I was really, really bummed about. I made 1,300, which is 700 pots less than last year. And I'm the type of person that I'm like, oh, well, if I'm not making more year over year, then I'm not improving. But I also have to give myself some grace that, like, last year was a really freaking good year. It was a really good year. It was solid. I had a lot of clients. I had a lot of commissions. I was pushing myself tremendously hard. I wasn't traveling as much with my day job, but I was still traveling and I was still able to pull that out. But the ramifications of that were, come January, I was dead inside.
I was going to say, how would you compare your mental health this year to last year at this time?
Yeah. I mean, last year at this time, I probably wasn't even thinking of myself. I just was on a mission. Mm-hmm. I know, yeah. Both of you kind of get into that mindset of like, this just has to get done. I'm just going to, like, I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to sleep as much. I'm just going to get it done. I'm going to be goal oriented. And we all know the results of that can be burnout. The results of that can be apathy.
Yeah.
You know, and I went into last year really motivated because of the new studio, right? Like, just, oh yeah, got this new studio. Super great. But I loved my job, my day job, and I lost it because the company decided to not move forward with our contract. And because it wasn't up for renewal, I was kind of in a place where I wasn't sure what was going to happen. So I ended up taking a different role, which requires a lot more brain effort than the previous role. Totally satisfied with that decision. Love what I'm doing in a day job. But the ramifications of that is that when I come home, my brain is mush. And the idea of putting any additional effort into developing anything new in the studio just gets pushed to the back burner. Now, I have been working very hard and I have been fulfilling my orders and I have been replying to my emails and everything. But as compared to last year, I did not try anything really new this year. I didn't push myself on shapes. I didn't come up with any new products. If you remember last year, I made the mixing bowls that I got really excited about and made too many of. We talked about that. But I would say like the only thing that I really worked on from a new product perspective were lidded vessels. Like I really wanted to get better at that. And I think I achieved modicum portion of that goal. My lids stay in place now. They don't just slide off. They fit the vessels. Yeah. But I'm just like looking at this year and I'm like, I need some help reinvigorating myself and feeling good about what I did this year. Cause I'm comparatively looking at last year's reaching my goals last year, like surpassing my goals last year. And this year, mid-year, having to kind of backpedal on my goals and then not really achieving even the numbers that I wanted to. Like I'm feeling a little bit defeated this December. Just putting it out there, like completely honest here.
No. What I was actually going to say was there was two things. One is got to remember two things. One of those things is the fact that I think if everyone did their metrics for this year in the craft industry, that everyone would find their sales were down.
Probably, yeah.
Except for, you know, possibly 10% of people who have got a marketing team or, you know, something else devoted that can really ram home sales and all this kind of stuff. Independent marketeers in particular. So in my day job, I sell a lot of things to independent marketeers who are doing things. And we have seen, or I personally have noticed that some of our, what I would call our seasonal regulars, either have not come in at all.
Mm.
Or if they've come in and you've spoken to them, they're kind of, they're looking pretty like tight-lipped. They're quite sort of, look, you know, the markets aren't, we're not hitting, you know, what would have been a £1,500 market is a £500 market. What, you know, other markets are just not happening. Most people basically are seeing a minimum of a 20% drop in their revenue.
Yeah.
And I have a few customers in the day job who rely on Christmas.
Hmm.
Like literally all they do is make all year for Christmas. And I know that one of the biggest market days of the season was the weekend just gone for us. And most markets closed that weekend because we had a storm that hit the UK, particularly across the Southwest. And it was not safe to have market stalls out there with gazebos and stuff that could be blown around and all this kind of thing. So there were a lot of people there who lost out on their potential highest portion of the year. So I think that's the kind of the first thing is that you're not alone, which doesn't help you, but hopefully kind of, you know, broadens a bit more. So it's not like it's just you and that the decisions you've made have made those things drop off. And the second part is that compared to this time last year when we didn't talk to you at all, because we had to boycott recording after October because there would be no time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that you're able to have these interactions socially, whilst it doesn't help the business, probably in the long run will help the business continue longer because you're able to emotionally and mentally engage with people around you.
Yeah. I would say that that's probably true with the family too. So that like,
yeah.
I'm able like to sit down and do crafts with Carver and not feel like, oh, I should really be in there doing that. And yeah.
Yeah. You're not resenting spending time with your child because you should be working.
Ew, yeah. Oh, when you put it that way. Ooh.
Well, you know, I'm nothing if not the blunt one. Raz, did you have any feedback for Heidi?
I think it's a pretty good comparison to say how to see how your metrics are relative to like the market overall, and maybe not so much compared to last year, because you have made like conscious trade-offs this year that is that we knew from the beginning was going to have give you less sales, less pieces made this year. But then at the same time, and that trade-off is not all that much more than what the market, quote unquote, is down anyway. So it's like,
yeah,
so
maybe it was good to do that this year.
Yeah. Like if your production is down 30%, but the market is down 20, then your decisions only cost you 10%.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You do that fancy math.
Yeah, I pretend. I pretend. All the screen here is all calculators.
That does make me feel better. I tried not to lose sight of the goals that I have in place for, like, you know, 2-5 years or whatever. And I don't think I'm, because I did take a pause this year, I don't necessarily feel like I put myself off track. And I think you're right, like, health-wise, mental health-wise, I am setting myself up for more longevity.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a really tough pill to swallow when I had these like ideas of like how much of a beast I could have been this year and I wasn't, you know, like, shoot.
But there's always next year.
Yeah, true, true.
I mean, there's always next year, but then now also you are actually a functional human being this time of year.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a bit wobbly last year at this point.
Not to put it too bluntly, but you spent 2 weeks after New Year's or something just recovering?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I was wiped.
Put it all the way around. You'd now have those 2 weeks sort of back to you can actually do and productive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, that's not like 700 pieces worth in 2 weeks.
True.
I hope. But it's something. It is that whole trade-off thing. And I think it's important to find that balance where you're working as hard as you feel comfortable doing without having growing resentment for the craft.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to remember that the reason why you do what you do is because you love it, I think it's definitely something a lot of people, you know, always say. There's two schools of thought, aren't there? You know, if you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life. Which it's a struggle to fully believe that one because I'm a cynical person. But the other school of thought is the fact that, you know, if you take something you love as a hobby and you try and make it into a business, then you can very quickly grow to resent it and fall in love with it.
Yeah.
And I think the tricky balance is you want to be that place in between those two, where you want to be still enjoying what you're doing, but able to make it a successful business. And I think for a number of years, you've been kind of following that trend. But because you're looking at the metrics every year, and as Raz says, you haven't really got anything to compare it to. It's just yourself the previous year. I've not made more, therefore I'm not better. Which, you know, is a very tricky thing to compare it on. I mean, we're not going to talk numbers, but value-wise, the natural assumption is, oh, well, you made 700 items less, therefore you're 700 items in value less. But if you had shifted your entire business model to making massive flower pots, which were the equivalent of 10 mugs in value, let's say, then you would naturally have made a lot less items, but you could be up on revenue.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's playing with mythical numbers, which is never a winning game.
Yeah. I think you can always bend statistics to the story you want to tell. And that's exactly, the problem with having those kind of metrics.
Yeah.
That's the good thing about statistics. You can just prove anything you like.
Yeah. You can tell whatever story you want and you've got math to back you up. But all that being said, like, I'm still in it, you know, like, I'm not going, well, you know, because we've talked about this before as well, like, where we've seen people that were just like machines and then all of a sudden they just stop.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Or they're like, the value of this is no longer where I need it to be. So I'm just going to quit. That is not where my head is. I'm more of the mindset of like, okay, well, I took a break this year at a point that that's not saying like this fall, I haven't worked really, really hard and I haven't had like month over month. It was like 100 pieces per order out the door, if not 200 in a couple of those months. So I think a big portion of the year that I took off was during the summer months where normally I would be doing shows.
Hmm.
I knew this year I wasn't going to do as many shows because it's too hard on my body. So I didn't need that much inventory for myself. And that was helpful. And also there was that provability that we talked about with the fact that the shows, even if I were to attend those shows, the feedback that I got from people that went to those shows, they would, didn't even make 10% what they made the year before.
Yeah. Hmm.
And I did two shows this year, like two paid shows, and I didn't make my booth feedback on those two shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the one, I only sold one item, and it was this little skull that Ben made that was a decoration on my booth. That was it. That's the only thing I sold that day. And it was a beautiful day. There were plenty of people. But I can't say it was the price, like the prices of my pieces. No. It was because no one even came into my booth.
No.
It was just that kind of experience this year.
We'll talk about Rasmus's experience with this in a moment. And this is partly why, way back when conceiving the idea of this podcast, I wanted it to be a European and American and myself. We've got these different areas of the world. So hopefully people can understand it's not just them and whatever. But, you know, Heidi, you've just expressed the fact that from the sounds of it, the craft, any market throughout the year it's been a struggle this year in America. Now, it might just be your region, but other people I've spoken to from other parts of the States have said very similar things. And that could be for a whole manner of different reasons we don't need to necessarily go into. In the UK, it's been the same. It's been a struggle. Even people, again, as I said earlier, who are like, these are a sure thing. I know what I make at these places each year. They have gone to those same events and they've struggled. Now, whether or not it's people being cautious with money because of political climate or whatever the situation is, certainly for us, it's been a struggle. Now, Raz, I know it's not been as good as it has been in previous years for you, but obviously in a couple of recent markets you've had, it's been okay. One of them was better than the previous year. The other one was still good, but not as good as the first day was initially hoping. But before we get onto that, shall we talk about your goals and whether or not you've achieved them or whatever? Because you and I are very bad at keeping metrics. So we don't really have that benchmark of going, oh, well, last year we did this year and this year we're doing this.
Yeah, I just have like the rough numbers of basically from my accountant and from the statistics on my website of saying like just order amounts and numbers from there. One of the biggest goals I had for this year is one that I feel that I failed at, and that was trying to get wholesale orders in.
Hmm.
None of that has come to fruition yet. I've had one who bought things on commission for me, or got things from on commission for me. Consignment, that's the word. Yeah, on consignment. And brought to a lot of biking and medieval fairs this summer for me. And that turned out to be pretty okay. Like, I weren't doing anything. I weren't doing markets myself. I just handed them some stock. They took a commission off of that. And then I basically just got the pieces back that was left over and money at the end of the season. Didn't cost me anything. I weren't out any items. We can go to the markets. That was quote unquote just free money in that sense.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing that vaguely looks like the wholesale parts I wanted to do more of.
Can you remind me, Raz, was it really only this January that I came over?
Yeah, it's nearly a year ago.
It feels like it was two.
Yeah.
All right, so you've not necessarily achieved the goal of wholesale.
I have not. And also, I've not felt like I have properly progressed in my crafts or had time to play and do the fun things that I have been wanting and dreaming of for a long while. But I feel like I'm closer and closer to actually having the time to do that, which is kind of good. And there's been other like small bits of play in between everything here, but I haven't been able to have the time and deep down into making swords and axes yet, which of course is the only reason I ever got into blacksmithing.
So if we take a step back there and we remind ourselves about some of the past episodes, what you're telling me is you didn't make the time.
Correct.
Because if I, you know, what we have to acknowledge, a couple of elephants in the room, is that whilst you didn't make time to play more and experiment more, you have expanded your businesses.
Yeah, I was going into that, but yeah,
into other avenues which have proved to be fairly profitable and I wouldn't say low impact, but you're not having to manufacture anything.
Yeah. Generally speaking, I think my business has grown by maybe 15% this year, like turnover. And a lot of that has been the fact that I've been able to create more unique products that requires far less of my time to get out the door, but that I still can make a reasonable amount of money on.
Yeah.
And that is specifically things like the guillotines. I launched that early May or something, and that has been one of the items that actually have been making me a fair bit of money this year. Like, it turnover wise it doesn't compare to the grinders and even heat kilns and any of that, but where I expected that maybe I would be selling like 10 guillotines over the whole year, I sold 10 in the first 2 months.
Cool.
And then people have been buying like spare dies and extra dies and things like that, like extra kit for it, to the extent that I accidentally sent the wrong guillotine dies to a customer a week ago, and he just ordered the correct one again and told me, yeah, I realize I need this one as well, so just send me the correct one this time. I was like, okay, yeah, my bad, but thank you.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So what you've actually got then is a situation where you had a goal in that you had this product you released and your expectation was to sell X amount across a period of time. But because you've now sold more than that and it's selling, you know, it's gaining popularity or at least settled at a regular pace, the time that you potentially could have devoted to other things is taken up with meeting demand on a product.
Well,
an element of it, not all of the time, but you know, you're.
And in that sense, I also have split my time up a lot more because also when this comes out, it's 3 months ago. I went on a drive and I picked up 9 anvils. And since then, I'm starting buying and selling anvils and blacksmithing tools as well.
Yeah.
And that also has been going a fair bit better than I expected, to the extent that I've started to figure out how to get things shipped off both the UK and the Netherlands and Germany and Sweden into Norway.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I realized when 3 people in a row called me and had like, not super specific like needs, but they wanted like kind of nicer anvils and bigger ones.
Yeah.
And I said, sorry, I don't have anything at the moment that fits what you want. That's when I realized that, okay, I should probably step up my game and try to figure out how and where I can get more tools into Norway from different avenues and not just rely upon like our local Craigslist and eBay kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, if you ever wanted a desk job, you'd be really great at sourcing.
There's a big if in that statement. And it's going to replace by never.
If you ever wanted a desk job.
Yeah.
I think there is one other element which does need to be considered here, and it genuinely is an important one for our listeners to consider as well, which is this is also the year that you have got a girlfriend.
Yes, as well.
And you know, and I do not mean this in a deprecating way at all, but obviously there is some of your time being taken up there with having a relationship with a person which you didn't have last year.
Yeah.
So that is going to take a percentage of time.
That replaces your fun time.
Different kind of fun. But yeah, I mean, that is like, it's a 5-hour drive one way.
Yeah.
So we alternate sort of who goes where, but at least once a month, maybe two times a month, I spend more than a weekend away, and it's a fair bit of drive. Good thing is she's also working. I just brings my laptop along and I can catch up on a lot of the organizational things that maybe would have been neglected if I was just stuck into Forge and just hammering at things.
Yeah.
So all in all, I'm really happy about how this year has gone, but I don't feel like I have succeeded on the thing that was specifically the goal I started out with. But I have succeeded at so many other things that came up along the way, and that is helping my business a fair bit.
Yeah.
And also, I also just had to check the metrics of my classes. So this year I had a total of 20 classes.
Wow.
And done, I think, like 72 students total. There's a few like group people that bought in, but my system isn't all the way up to date with that. My goal is to kind of average a week and a month of classes. But then there's been people booking in extra, and granted, some of the weekend classes that used to be 2 day earlier are now split into two separate 1 day classes. So it looks a bit funny.
Yeah.
But still, that feels really good as well.
I think you're a perfect example for our listeners, Rasmus, and for those of you who haven't necessarily already cottoned on. So he set a goal at the beginning, which he hasn't achieved, but he has excelled in a number of other areas that weren't on his goal list, but he's still not happy because he hasn't achieved his goal. But just bear with it. Like, I understand why, because you haven't achieved the goal. But I think it's helpful to our listeners to realize that you can be in that situation where, oh no, I haven't achieved my goal, but you can look at all the other stuff around and go, but my business has grown by 15% approximately, despite the fact that I haven't achieved that goal. So that's a really positive thing. No, you haven't achieved that one goal you set, but your business has still grown by 15%, and you've created these other revenues of income that are potentially going to keep growing in the future. I think it's also worth thinking about the people who might set goals that aren't actually that unobtainable, and will look at their year and go, I've achieved all my goals. Oh, now I wish I'd set more, so I would have done more.
Yeah.
Basically, what I'm getting at is being able to step back, or have friends sit with you and step back and say, look at what you did achieve, and look how well your business has done, depending on the things around it. And look at what you haven't achieved, not in a negative way, but go, how can I do better next time?
Yeah.
Okay. So from a negative perspective then, so in my perspective, if I can put that forward, I applied to... I applied to a market that is quite difficult to get into, but I applied to it anyway, and I submitted all of the things required, and I believed I had quite a good chance and images, and I didn't get a place, and I was informed that I was on the waiting list, which, shock horror, no one pulled out, so I didn't get in that market. That isn't this year, to be fair. That was last year, but even so. And 2 weeks ago, I applied for a bursary position, I think a scholarship position with a wood turner, which would have been 3 days of paid for tuition and business assistance and help with the travel to that person as well. And I was informed a couple of days ago that I was also not successful at this point in time. Both of those situations, the only way you're going to get there is by applying. But I can tell you now that being rejected at both times makes it really, really hard for you to then look at the next opportunity and make the application for that and feel like you're ever going to get it.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is very good to look on the positives, but it's very easy to dwell on the negatives. And I think, as we've said many times on this podcast before, if you're going to do like a year review or a consideration at any point in your business career, make sure you do it with friends around you or like-minded people, so that you can do as we're doing now, and you can look at the positives together and the negatives together, or see how your friends can say, yeah, but we've witnessed this change in you. You seem so much happier. You're much more relaxed and all that kind of thing. Because it's so easy when you're on your own to go, I'm a failure. Okay. And, you know, and forget that fail stands for first attempt in learning. I'm a failure. this is never going to do any better. Why am I bothering with this? And a horrible doom spiral. When realistically, what we can do is say, okay, I didn't get in this time. In my example, I'm going to write a better application next time. I'm going to create a better piece and submit that for review. I'm going to be inspired to really push the boat out and see it as a positive challenge rather than as something negative.
Just to say this clearly, I'm like mad at myself for not having reached the goal of getting like a proper wholesale order going.
Yeah.
It is more that it is a reminder that I should keep focusing on that next year.
Yeah.
If that is still something I want, and it is, because I think that would be still be a nice extra revenue stream for me.
Yeah.
And I have more leads I can follow up on now than I did last year.
I was just going to say, first question, have you contacted any of the people who've expressed an interest?
I have not, but I do have a meeting planned with the biggest library in Oslo.
Excellent.
And that was one of the people that came up to our booth back in January and were interested in maybe having me make things custom for them.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
On a complete side note, while we were talking about metrics, I suddenly had a thought and I checked my app for my website. So last year, I had one sale on my website.
Hmm.
This year, I've had six.
Yeah.
But because they've been so spaced out, it's felt like, oh, I'm, you know, website's not really worth it. And I've done no extra marketing. I've done no kind of like really drive and come and look to the website or newsletter mailing list or anything like that. So, you know, things have been improving, things have been changing, but this is where the metrics are good. If you actually take a moment to take note of that and to record them, then you can witness and say, oh, actually, I've done better than I thought. You know, 12 months might feel like it goes really fast, but it's actually, you know, can be quite a long time where you forget, like, it didn't feel like it was only 12 months ago that I went to Norway. It didn't feel like it was only, you know, 3 months ago that I'd had another three or four orders through the website. It's worth doing the reflective period. And again, probably with friends around, if you think it's been a bad year, and not let it turn into a rant session or a doom spiral and that kind of stuff.
I can fill you in a little bit, though. The first year I had sales on my website, I had a total of 5.
All right, show off.
The next year I had 0. Then I had 9.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. And then 27, and then it's been 50, 50, and then I'm at 91
as
this year.
As your teaching and newsletter has grown.
Yeah. I mean, I'm skipping over a couple of years because my website is actually coming up on 10 years old soon.
Hmm.
But yeah, it is a slow going on a website the first time around.
Yeah. Interesting. So are we setting goals for next year now? Or are we going to keep that as a personal thing to start with in the new season?
I think I need to distance myself a little bit from the end of year goals to be able to set my expectations for next year. I definitely think there's carryover, obviously. Like some of the things that I wanted to achieve this year, I didn't meet my metrics. They'll carry over into next year. The one thing that I did want to highlight is my investment in my business is a little bit off from center for pottery. I invested in a laser and I would like to use that as my like fun thing to figure out and expand how I'm doing what I'm doing. And we talked a little bit in the pre-show about some of the goals that I have around that specific piece of machinery. But I think maybe that's something we can come back in January with our next season to kind of kick off like what investments did we make this year that can help set us in a better place next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the benefit of the listeners who might not understand and think that you are literally shooting things with a laser.
Pew, pew.
could you just explain a little bit what that machine does?
Sure. So basically it is a box that has a X and a Y axis that the laser moves across and it lifts as well. So it's got the Z axis And the laser itself is more powerful than one that I had previously. The one that I had previously would just like basically catch things on fire. And that's about it. it did engrave wood to a certain amount. It was really good for leather, which was the main reason that we got it for our business. Is my husband was doing furniture making, and it was an open laser. So like all of the radiation, all of the light pollution, everything you were just exposed to. And it was nice because it was very portable. So we could just like put it right on top of whatever we were trying to laser. If that was a desk, if it was a table, if it was, you know, an end table or something. Now with this unit, I went with the WeCreate 20 watt diode laser. It is much more powerful. My old laser was only a 2 watt laser. This one is 20 watt. And so it can cut material. It can etch metal, and it can engrave leather and all those things. And the reason I chose that was because there was a huge discount comparison between the X tool and say like one of the other enclosed lasers.
Yeah.
Price wise was great, but it was powerful enough that I can employ it to basically make, I don't know if you've seen some of my work, but I sometimes employ the use of rolling pins with laser designs on them. And I really wanted to design my own rolling pins. And I'd been reaching out to people in the maker world about partnering with them to do that. And really didn't seem like anybody was really all that interested. And I'm a nerd enough. I mean, I have 3D printers that I use to make stamps and everything else. And sitting there trying to balance, like, would this improve something within my workflow? And then I started to watch some videos about like what a 20 watt laser was capable of, and it can etch stone. And guess what?
Yeah.
Stone is very akin to pottery once it's fired. So I started this week in experimenting with that. But the benefits of this laser is that it's much safer because it's an enclosed laser.
Yeah.
It has its own exhaust system. So it's got this this fan and this air pump that's attached to it. But the one that I bought also has an external filtering system. So if I am... Yeah. If I am burning leather, which stinks really, really, really bad, it kind of filters some of that smell out and you don't get the noxious leftovers. But it's also, the software is super easy to follow. It's very plug and play. I can take my illustrations, take it directly in. But the most impressive thing that I've been able to do so far was take a finished piece of pottery, put it on the rotary tool, and engrave the entire outside of the piece with snowflakes.
Nice.
And it came out so flipping cool. It engraved really, really deep. And it didn't get lost in the glaze. So super excited with what that can do. I tested engraving on greenware, which is the material... Mm. The name for the material before you fire it for the first time. So that's greenware. It's completely dried clay. It will carve into it.
Cool.
With the laser. And I only did it at like a 20% laser focus. If I go to 100%, I am super excited to see how deep the engraving is going to be. Because I can, although right now I use a lot of stamps and everything, this will allow me to get more proficient with being able to preliminarily put designs in the clay just for funsies. But what it means for the final fired piece, like the glazed pieces, is I can do more custom work faster. So if you think about what I currently do, I'm making a stamp. I'm stamping each individual piece for, say, like a coffee company. And then my minimum quantity for that is like 20 units. now I can open up that to maybe a smaller firm and be able to do 5 units because I already have blanks on the shelf that already are, you know, various different colors. They're all the same shape. I just take it to the laser. I can engrave, you know, somebody's name or whatever. And maybe I won't do them at the full wholesale price, but maybe I'll do them, you know, 30% more than the wholesale price because they're ordering a smaller amount. But
yeah.
It just opens me up to be able to service smaller companies and individuals that want them without, you know, them having to pay full price for the pieces.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's exceptionally well thought out justification for buying a shiny new machine.
I, you know, I'm the type of person that when I go to a clothing store, I walk around the clothing store, I fill up my cart, and then I walk around the clothing store and putting everything back. So I need those reasons to be able to invest in a big piece of equipment. I mean, this, it's not a, it's not a $6,000 machine. So like that makes me feel a lot better. But it was almost a $2,000 investment.
Yeah.
So I really needed to have.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Good reason to take the business money, especially this year, not having made as much.
Yeah.
Laser. Pew, pew.
it's always a consideration across that. Unless either of you have got anything else to throw in there, we are pretty close to our time.
Yeah.
And we know that Rasmus needs to run away and dance the night away.
Woogie, woogie, woogie.
Something like that. Absolutely. Well, guys, as always, it's been lovely chatting to you and to our listeners. Hopefully, our thoughts have reached out to you and kind of calmed some fears, elevated some thoughts and things that you've had about your year. If you haven't done a year review yet, as we said, it would be a good thing to do. Don't worry if you haven't got metrics, just kind of consider the things. Write a list of all the positive things that have happened for you and your business this year. As I said, it's good to do with some friends who are interested in sort of invested in you, and talk things through. And as Heidi said, that can help inform goals for next year. But after you've kind of let them sit in your head for a little while, as that go forward. So this is, as we mentioned at the beginning, the end of this series. We are going to return with a new series. And as previously mentioned, make sure you are following Setting Up Shop on Instagram. That is setting_up_shop, SHOPPE. And please, we would really appreciate it if you would tell friends and share this around. So talking about metrics, we did a metrics about our listenership across the seasons, and across all 3 seasons, on average, we have a solid 50 listeners per episode, which is not a small number, and we're very grateful to all of you. However, across three seasons, to be at 50 consistently, whilst good, isn't showing growth. And we just mentioned, talking about businesses, it's always good to see growth each year. So if you were able to share it with friends, remember to listen to other episodes and talk it up, we would really appreciate it. The more listeners we get, the more likely we are to be able to continue doing things, and maybe the costs would be covered. And we can also do things like bringing you exciting merchandise, which has been, we begin investigating.
Oh, yeah.
So that hopefully, I'm going to set an informal goal now that will be ready to be launched at the beginning of the next season. And there's no panicky look on either Rasmus's or Heidi's faces. So that feels like an achievable goal. So yes, from all of us, we hope you had a great Christmas. We hope you're going to have a lovely new year. And we look forward to hearing all about your goals and things like that in the next season and as things come along. So my name's Dan. You can find me at Bevelwood UK for the moment. Rasmus, you can find at Rasmus Lowen. And Heidi, you can find at Whitehall Pottery. And collectively, we've been Setting Up Shop. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening.
Bye.
See you.